Schön, dass ihr da seid zu dieser sehr besonderen Folge für mich, weil das war eine Riesenherausforderung. Jeder hat ja als Deutscher so seinen englischen Akzent, den er mal für sich etabliert hat. Und ich habe den gebrochen in dieser Folge, weil Adam Jack, also Schaus, aus Australien und Neuseeland kommen und ich den Akzent manchmal gern imitiere, habe ich das gesamte Interview in einem Versuch eines australischen Akzents geführt. Es war sehr, sehr witzig, aber natürlich ging es auch viel um ihre Musik, wie es ist, Musik zu machen, mit großen anderen Stars, wie zum Beispiel Robin Schulz zu arbeiten und. Die beiden sympathischen Jungs haben mich richtig in ihr Leben reingelassen. Das hört ihr hier alles in dieser neuen Folge mit mir, Jale. Viel Spaß.
Der Energy Star Talk. Eure Stars im Interview.
Check, hello.
Hello, hello, Ed and Jack.
Hi.
Okay, so before we start, I set myself this challenge because I lived in Australia for like 3 months. And I want to get better at imitating this accent. So I'm going to try and speak in my interpretation of this accent. If I don't do that, I'll lose a bet as well. So
so far, so good.
Really? Yeah. And it's so exciting for me to speak to people who actually, you know, you're laughing.
Yeah.
It's going to be so much fun. Nice to have you here. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for having
Very
us.
Very good. We're so happy to be here. It's the last show of our big tour.
I know. How has it been so far?
Wonderful. Yeah. It's the first time.
Your accent is superb.
Yeah. It's so good to me.
It's uncanny.
True Aussie in Berlin.
The thing is, I can't take myself seriously when I talk like this because I usually don't. I like do the American accent because it comes more naturally as a German. I don't know.
It's really
But we're
going
to stick to it. I'm going to pretend I'm Tammy Hambrow. I don't know if you know her. But
you should be an actor.
Maybe.
Yeah. The tour has been wonderful. It's the first time we've done a live show across Europe. And it was a bit of an experiment, a bit of a test. We got a new band together. And it's just been so special to share the music live and all the Schaus songs all at once.
Yeah. What was your favorite city? Where did you feel most like welcome, warm? Do you have any highlight city? Or is that unfair to the other cities?
It's Berlin.
It's Berlin, of course.
of course
there was
course
only,
it's
but
Berlin.
You haven't played yet here. We're not going to jinx it.
But well, we know.
You know. Okay, how was Vienna, for example? Because I feel like it's the small version of like more pretty, a little more neat.
I mean, I love Vienna walking around. It feels so rich and, you know, so walkable. And we went to the Volksoper and saw a beautiful, funny operetta. the Vienna crowd was amazing. Yeah, it was a cute, small little cafe kind of vibe. And the crowds have always been enthusiastic. And, you know, they love our music and they like to sing along. And I think we enjoy it more than DJing, you know, because people have come to see us and they want only our songs, no one else's. And yeah, Vienna was superb.
It's a special kind of crowd when, you know, like everyone there has listened to your music in like their private scenery in life and then they get to share it with other people. How is that feeling before stepping on stage? Like the last 5 minutes, like preparing to see all these people, how do you do that? Or what do you do to kind of like maybe calm your nervous system, you know?
I mean, I can't wait. So I get very excited. Yeah. So I think it's just a beautiful sense of anticipation.
Is coffee smart then or not? is your heart?
Coffee all day, every day, you know. But it just takes too long. You just want it to happen faster.
Yeah. So you're very excited, or maybe not nervous for tonight, but rather anticipating the finale. What can fans expect from your show? Because it's going to be on a boat, right? Did I read that correctly? Or it's like near the water?
I think it's near the water. It's at Machine House. Don't know if it's on a boat. We have played on a boat. We have played on a boat in Berlin before. I'm not actually sure.
Should I stop so
no,
you can
come? Good. I like
It's at Machine House.
Yeah. Isn't that near the water?
Probably, yeah. We don't know.
I'm from Berlin and I thought like that's near the water. Like I know.
Maybe it's a boat. Might be a submarine.
I was hoping it was like a laundromat.
Yeah.
Or like clothes washing.
Yeah, we've got a lot of dirty clothes.
No, it's not. It's just going to be a floor probably. But yeah, it's going to be so exciting. I feel like especially we've had a really terrible winter. Yeah. I mean, you've been in Europe. I hate it. Oh my God, I can't. No, I'm going to do it. So I feel like this is a chance for people to kind of get inner warmth through your beats, through your enthusiasm, right? Did you feel that? Did you feel a difference? Because, I mean, if you're when you're performing in Australia and like the weather's always warm, I feel like the people are never in a bad mood. Like, how can they be in a bad mood? I mean, the most you get is like 15 degrees maybe in the cities, right? Yeah, a little bit of rain. But I feel like here it's been like I've been in an existential crisis due to the weather, you know. And I feel like, did you notice this difference due to the weather or like in Europe to the crowd you know from back home? That was like, do you notice, any difference?
They're always different. Every city in Europe is different. Every country in Europe is different. For me, the winter was exciting because we don't get snow and it felt charming and romantic and we get to leave soon. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think the European crowds sing even louder. And I think they are just so keen to get warm and dance and come together and be together. It feels like maybe, you know, you have your Christmas in the middle of winter. Ours is in the middle of summer. So people need to celebrate in winter to feel good. So I think that's why parties in winter are important, yeah.
Would you prefer like minus 13 to 20 degrees over 40 degrees of heat?
Yeah, 40 degrees, it's impossible for me.
Impossible?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
Okay.
You can't, even if everyone pulls down the curtains and closes the doors, you lie inside.
AC, there's AC, right?
There's AC, yeah.
Yeah. So one of you is from New Zealand, actually, right? Who you are. So, okay, I heard that. So you're like not sensitive to, because New Zealand can get quite chilly, right?
Yeah. But similar to Melbourne, really. A bit colder. Oh. Very windy. I'm used to wind. I'm wind resistant.
Wind resistant, that's good to be. Do you get what my question would also be? Like, you've been touring for a long time. You've, like, it's been a complete rush of adrenaline. Do you get homesick? And when you get home, do you, like, get this after touring low? And what do you do to handle both emotions?
I don't get homesick, no. Yeah, it's been a beautiful tour, so it's like it could keep going.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like it when you've got this team and this bus that goes on and the energy just gets better and better. It could go on forever. I miss, you know, my family, my friends. I look forward to seeing them, but you know, and when I get back, it'll be great. I don't think I'll have a tour come down. I'll just try and do some more music and hang out with people, but this tour, having the team, having the band, has just felt like an energy that gets better and better and better, you know?
Mm. Yeah. So no real homesickness, but maybe something you miss, even like food-wise. What is the first thing you're going to do when you're back home? Is it maybe a bit of Vegemite, which I tried and I liked it? Actually really liked it with butter and it was nice. Is there anything that you feel like, oh, this is missing in Europe? We should import that from back home. Is there anything?
Nah, you got it all. It's perfect, yeah.
I mean, look, for me, it's lots of Chinese food and the Asian food in general. And Melbourne is fantastic. We have lots of immigrants and they make the best food. So that's the one thing I miss a bit in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of nice, like, Vietnamese places here. I don't know about the rest of Europe.
They're better in Melbourne, sorry.
Okay. No, I'll give you that. I lived there for, like, a month, so I really liked it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about your music, though. You had your first time working with Vintage Culture, right? How was that? How was the process of, you know, because I feel like I don't know how it's like to work as an artist, as a DJ and like doing music, but I feel like you have your own ways and then there's a new person who does it completely differently. How was it to get together with Vintage Culture and how was the process?
Well, we never met in real life, so it is a digital experience.
And how was that?
I mean, you know, the funny story is he did a remix of Love Tonight, you know, with Kiko Franco, which became very popular. He had been messaging us on SoundCloud for years, being like, guys, I've done this remix. And we didn't check the SoundCloud. We weren't even paying any attention to any social media.
You ghosted him.
We ghosted him. And we didn't even really know who he was because we're not really from the DJ world, you know. And then one of our label or something went to the social media, to SoundCloud, and was like, what the hell? Vintage Culture's been messaging you for years with this remix. He wants to do it. And that came out and it was a real hit, and we were very grateful because he got to spread the song to South America, to Brazil, to Mexico in particular. And then this song was the same. He just messaged me on Instagram, and this time I read it and it was just like, hey bro, I want to remix Sunrise, send me the stems. And he did a whole new version. We did like a collab, but really, yeah, it's just been a digital experience of swapping files over the internet. But he's got good groove and good taste, and he always treats our music nicely.
Is there any meeting in real life planned for the future?
Don't think so. Yeah, different worlds.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. I was going to speak about Love Tonight a little more because the first time I heard it was back in 2021, I think, when it became like really big, and it was in the middle of the pandemic. And it really, I feel like it created a sense of like collective longing for connection and love. And how was that for you to, because it was originally released in 2017, to kind of have a rebirth, if you want to say it, call it that, of this song? And how did it feel for you guys to, yeah, especially during those times when there was so much uncertainty in the air, and I feel like here we felt trapped. And it's so funny because now I feel like I don't even remember what it was like to be in COVID, but back then it was everything, like all we ever talked about and thought about all day in our homes. Yeah, how was that? How did that feel?
Look, I loved it when it was, Love Tonight was quite anonymous and unknown. And so I think unfortunately we've sort of put our faces on it. And it's just reminding me of how much I loved that time when there was a Love Tonight that just kind of existed. You know, it was just out there in the world.
For rare people to find.
Yeah. It was a special connection that people kind of made on their own through, you know, generally, their sort of digital worlds that were quite isolated. Well, you know, their physical worlds was isolated. So, yeah, it's an interesting time that you're remembering.
Yeah. And for you, how was...
Yeah, it's funny, like Jack says, there was a long period where people just knew this song. We didn't have an Instagram, we didn't have a social media, and that was a kind of magical mystery time. But I think like what you said about the people, you know, joining...
I feel like they needed that.
The magic, yeah, there's something about the magic of people singing together and coming together, particularly in a time of lockdown when you can't come together. And, you know... It seems like an obvious answer, but I like to think people needed lots of voices singing about love. And to see it connect with a global historical moment, you know, which is kind of never happens in the modern age, it's like a soundtrack to a movie or something.
That's beautifully said. Yeah. And I feel like the whole time was so cinematic, so maybe, yeah.
When they make the movie, maybe it'll be their soundtrack, you know? COVID the movie. I'm sure maybe in 20 years.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's been fairly little, you know.
It's too soon, we're too traumatized. I think you need 10 more years, yeah.
How is it for you in the pandemic? Like, was it hard for you to, because in my head, musicians or people who are very much in their own world, because you need that, it's like your source of creativity to be with yourself. I feel like if you can't isolate yourself and like lock yourself in for 24 hours to, I don't know, process or create, then maybe it's not your calling. But you would strike me as very social creatures, both of you. Was that very hard for you to not be able to talk to, or not maybe see, hug, kiss, be in big bars where you can smell the sweat of other people and have some beer of them, of theirs on your shoulder? Like, was it hard for you guys?
For me, it was... an interesting time because I was a teacher, primary school teacher, and so I was able to go into the primary school a lot, and you know, I was really finding music very powerfully connective, like in person, because there were still kids. You know, they were still going to schools. So I think that's where I got my experience of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
For me, at first I loved it, to be honest, so much. Like, I was working a job that I really liked, but it's just week after week. And for me, it was like an interruption in the way we understand time and think of time. All of a sudden, what day it was didn't matter, what you went didn't matter. And I loved this change of perspective that I could, that, you know, the whole social construct seemed to dissolve and made me really think about what we are as humans and what we're doing. And but of course, I missed, you know, the people, the sweat, the bodies, the singing, eventually. But for a long time, I just felt it was nice to just walk around more and be in parks more. The weather was pretty good, if I recall correctly. And yeah, it was kind of freeing in a way, but it wasn't musical for me. I didn't feel inspired to make any music, even though I had all the time I want in the studio. It was just, there was something lacking in inspiration. I feel like a lot of musicians I know, even though, like you said, oh, so much time alone, a lot of people didn't make any music because what was the point, it felt like, you know?
Now, you were not sure if you'd ever get to share this with, like, a bigger crowd, or if it was even, I remember there's this one famous band in Germany and they were like, we feel so decadent to now release albums and make money where there's so many people struggling and not being able to make a living because like bars had to close down. There's so many clubs here in Berlin that died due to COVID and stuff. But that's very negative. And thankfully, I don't know how. I don't know exactly how, because they never communicated it, but it somehow stopped being an issue. So we're back to pretty much normal, I feel like, at least here. And that also enabled you guys to go to Ibiza last year, autumn of last year, also being there with Robin Schulz. How was that experience for you?
Ibiza for us was...
Ibiza, see.
Yeah, Ibiza. It's totally bewildering, you know? Like, it's nothing like anything we have in Australia, not even close. In the Southern Hemisphere, I don't think so, maybe in South America, but it was bewildering and strange, and that's one of the gigs where I felt quite discombobulated. But, you know, in the end, I also just really... The club was amazing and big and powerful, and we got to play loud music to a lot of people in one of the best sounding clubs in the world. And in the end, it was delightful. But yeah, Ibiza, it can be so full of people and traffic and money. You know, the money is insane.
That was my question.
The,
like,
hyper
is the crowd
capitalist commodified. It's like the pure extraction of music into money. And now, and you know, like the is the guys from Dubai just bought Pasha, for example. It's changing what music is and what clubs are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's still got a lot of the, it's still got some of the old beating heart of this old hippie island where people used to go and just take drugs and make music, you know?
Yeah, I feel like its reputation really has changed over the last decade.
Yeah.
I've never been, so how...
Okay. It's a contradiction, I think, you know? The place.
It's a contradiction, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
But the crowd itself, like the crowd that's celebrating, that's dancing, that's just enjoying the vibes. I mean, no matter how much you're focused on money, I feel like in those moments, I hope at least you can go for like a minute and just dance. And how is that? Did you feel like, is there an essence of this crowd that's always the same? Like, would you say like there's something that every crowd shares, even in Ibiza with all the money crazy people?
I think it's nice when, we met some people that were, like, locals.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in the other side, I guess, of the world there. And, you know, it was just the thing of, like, they wore shorts, which was a big mistake, you know. And there's these places, you know, lots of places where you can make these mistakes. And... there's something about like helping a crowd to overcome anxiety or stress that really is very difficult when there's all these like tangible errors you can make, like mistakes. And I think, you know, it's a classic gatekeeping world. But we got them in, even though they wore shorts, you know.
Wow, you did that.
We did that.
Congratulations.
Exactly.
Little rebels, revolutionary.
Yeah, shorts in the club, baby. Yeah.
I have one last question to Robin Schulz, because you met him, right? And did you talk to him? Because he's like, he has reputation of never talking to anybody. Mm. And I'm like kind of scared of him, because I once met him on a festival and I was just looking, and I was like, you know, and there's this other, he's one of the biggest, obviously, German DJs out there. And then there's also Paul Kalkbrenner. I don't know if you've heard of him. And he's like the sweetest person. He'll be like, oh, hey, and give you chocolate and everything. And then there's this contrast, and I feel like, how is it for people who kind of, you know, meet him in a professional context? Because I was there privately on a festival. Yeah. I was intimidated.
Yeah.
I was intimidated as well.
Me too, oh, cool. Yeah. We're all scared. Really, he has a massive team, you know, a massive infrastructure of people around him. And it was quite something to witness them all coming in. And we met, in inverted quote unquote, met. It was just on stage behind the decks. He's a big guy, you know. Yeah. He gave me a big hug. That was nice. Aww. But it was a bit theatrical, you know. But
did he give you a hug too?
I don't think so.
Yeah. You're like, I don't want it.
Maybe a handshake. But yeah, no, we didn't talk. So his reputation continues.
I have this theory that he can't talk nicely, that he like stutters or something, and he's trying to hide that, maybe as, like from the being a perfectionist or something. That's my theory, because why else would you never talk?
Maybe he's tired of it, too many questions. But he's got a big team that walks in front of him, and you know, he is at the center of a orbit of people.
Would you rather forever have like a small team, or aspire to have like a big, huge team that's representing you all over the world, maybe in Vietnam, I don't know, wherever?
The smaller the better, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, family. People you want to know. You want to be able to call anyone.
I feel like you want like a small circle, and you also want to take your time and really dedicate to what you're doing. That's why I wanted to talk about your EP that dropped, and also your debut album that dropped last year, where you could also find songs that were a little older. How do you decide on what to put together on like an album or an EP, and how long does this process take you guys? And do you discuss a lot?
I think it's a year per song, and they add up. So, you know,
10 years.
Eventually you get one.
But we have help, we have team. We discuss. I think it's really helpful to have some people that you're close to, but also outsiders, to be like, how about this collection, you know? Because when you can have so many songs and so many different ways of putting them together, we're grateful that our label and our team have some good ears and good music brains. And, you know, we just birthed something together, and there it is, an album. Yay.
Yay. Yes. Congratulations. And 10 years, it's like a long time span. So I feel like I'm changing every 10 minutes. How would you, like, if somebody asked you, like Ed, or like, how much of your personality at the time is represented in that song? And then if it's like an older song that still finds its way to the album, how do you, like, do you distance yourself, or do you say, no, it's a fragment of me that's maybe still within me somewhere? Maybe I can't even see it anymore, but it's still there, and I can. Is there something like that? Or maybe like a sort of cringe way, like, oh my God, I'm not like this anymore. Please don't think that's me.
That's a beautiful question. I think it's when you can only, maybe you can only put time in to music when you are sort of, you're not stressed, there's no anxiety. And a lot of that time was in the past. At the moment, or like ever since like 2021, there was a lot of stress and anxiety that kind of comes with this business, I think. And so the older songs can feel really slower and deeper, and they've got the time in them, and you kind of can't manufacture time. like the time, the amount of time you work on something, the amount of time you think about something. And so, I mean, it's a product of the time maybe. And so, yes, that might be when you were in a different personal headspace or something, but you can always bring yourself around to it if you spend enough time, I think. It's like the rush and the pressure and the stress and anxiety that makes you want to build stuff really quickly is what makes stuff bad, I think.
That's very true. Yeah, I feel like whenever I'm trying to rush something, I neither feel what I'm doing. Like even if it's something so little as putting on my skincare, if I rush through it, which I do sometimes, like nobody's standing there with a gun threatening me to pull the trigger if I don't do it in 2 seconds, you know? But I'm so disconnected from myself in these moments. So I think it's really beautifully said that you said through taking your time, you can stand behind your decisions maybe better. Are you happy with your album both and also your Collective Ecstasy? Are you happy about the way it came out?
Very much so. And I think just to reference what you said, you know, there's so much self-imposed stress and anxiety that people have from the world that it's like for a minute to just realize that it's not real and you can kind of turn it off and take your time, particularly with music and particularly with this modern schedule of, you know, people, we need a new release. We've tried to resist that. And I think the result, which has been the album after 10 years, I'm very happy with it. Yeah, I love it. And the old songs, even though they were a different place and we were different people and we were with different people, I think they also capture a moment in time, you know? And that moment is always nostalgic and, you know, I remember sweetly and fondly. So the album for me is a bit of a nostalgic journey.
So it's going to be another 10 years before there's another album.
At least, yeah.
No, I like that. I feel like if you have the chance and the freedom and the space to do it like that, why would you not? I feel like a lot of young artists have the pressure to release as quickly as possible, as make the tracks as shortly as possible and stuff, which... Yeah, it kind of takes away what music's about, which you said something really beautiful. It's like we collectively feel this anxiety. Mm. What would you like a person listening to your music to feel? And what would you like them, what emotions would make you most happy if you knew that you triggered that or them with your work?
The feel of the bubble bath.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Yeah,
to just emerge and like let go maybe a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it's also in the title.
It's very obvious that, but I feel
a
like
a bubble bath with 1,000 people. You know?
Oh wow, yeah, that's a collective ecstasy. That's it. Because I feel like this state, we all often try to get into an state of ecstasy so artificially, like with. Yeah. You know, I don't want to talk about substances here, like anything else, even if I drink coffee or I listen to the third podcast of the day and I don't even really know who I'm listening to anymore. And I feel like I constantly have to we have a collective dopamine addiction. I think we can all agree. I don't know how you guys are.
Of course.
I mean, you already mentioned it a little bit, but I don't think you have the best relationship to social media or with social media.
Yeah. No, I mean, social media is we don't really touch it much. You know, we have a team that does stuff, which we're grateful for. And, you know, like Love Tonight became a hit. It was an 8-minute long kind of journey at a time of 3-minute songs. And
I think
an album took 10 years. And, you know, I think you have to constantly keep reminding yourself that all these pressures are not real and, you know, nothing's real. Everything's kind of made up. So if you can just follow your spirit and your heart and what being human is, you know, and try and feel human and feel other people and communicate and share and love, that's what you just have to remind yourself every day, I think. I'm not sure if I answered a question there, but...
No, but it's very beautiful what you said. I feel like you can say it so easily and it sounds so nice, but it's actually so hard.
It takes daily reminder, daily, hourly sometimes.
Hourly,
you know?
Yeah. Maybe every minute. So... That's a very nice way to kind of get to some sort of end because there's another show happening in here. What are you looking forward to the most? And maybe if you could Imagine yourself Berliners listening to this interview right now. What would you like them? What would you like to tell them before they come to your show or gig? I don't even know if you say show, gig, performance.
Yeah, all of the above.
Yeah, like yeah. Maybe we could start with that Berlin thing. I think it's very exciting. And then yeah, what you're looking forward to the most this year, but also maybe in the future. And what we can expect. But I know you like to take your time and teasing is maybe not, yeah, maybe you can't tease anything, but just generally.
Very much looking forward to the show as a preview for when we come back for the bigger summer festivals, I think.
Mm. Yeah, the shows feel beautiful and nice and intimate. And if you want to come, it's the last opportunity to have this intimate club experience of Shouse, maybe because... I think this show is built for a big stage and a lot of people and a festival. So I want to see, you know, I want to see 10,000 people singing along with us.
Yeah, that's it's like goosebump moments. Like yeah. I've only been to two festivals, so I'm like a little bit of a newbie. I don't know. I can't take the sleep deprivation very well. And sometimes I'm also triggered by humans, but... That's very nice. So what, okay, festivals, summer festivals, everything, but what else are you looking forward to the most, both work-wise and also privately maybe? Anything you want to share?
I think the slow processing of what's just happened, which has been very special, and then I think building out with lots of different singers and instrumentalists and sort of going off inside directions. I think there'll be a middle central hub of Shouse, and then there'll be lots of side directions, which will be very exciting.
Yeah. Music, you know, always excited about music and what this tour has kind of shown us, which is it made it come alive again. And so to experiment with different people and instruments and places and times and see if we can see what comes together in the middle and see what comes together on the sides and just follow music, you know? Yeah.
That's very beautifully said, especially with the places, because I feel like wherever you go, even if it's the money madness of Ibiza, it kind of influences your soul, your whatever you've, like your entire nervous system, right, has to process this. And if you don't do it actively, it'll do it like subconsciously anyway for you.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, that's where that came from.
There's always... place in good music is a place, you know?
Yeah.
Is in a place. It's from a place. Yeah.
That's a very nice way to set a point here. Thank you so much for letting me into a fragment of your being, because I feel like this is just not you entirely. No, I don't like this, that you get 20 minutes.
It's been a wonderful interview. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and your Australian accent is...
I've held back. I've held myself back so much because I felt like I can't just like, you know, especially the word water. No, how do you say it? Water.
Water.
Can you say
what? He says he's more Australian.
I refuse. I'm sorry.
Okay, I get that. Well, thank you anyway, and maybe see you in the future.
Thank you.
Der Energy Star Talk. Einer von vielen Energy Original Podcasts. Noch mehr Infos findet ihr auf energy.de.